everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 284. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And, of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have, of course, a fun episode for you this week. We must get started with our guest. David Michael Barrett is the screenwriter, producer of the acclaimed indie comedy Such Good People, which I just watched. It stars Michael Urie and Randy Harrison. It premiered at the Miami GLFF in the summer of 2014, and it's currently playing festivals worldwide. He is also the screenwriter, producer of Bad Actress, an award-winning dark comedy about a has-been TV star who restarts her career by, of course, murdering her own husband. It's available on Hulu, Netflix, and iTunes. His play, David's play, Brentwood, was included at Noah Wiley. Oh my God, do I love him? His Blank Theater Company's Living Room series of new works, and his work was also featured in Outfest's prestigious screenwriting lab. He writes nonfiction essays. We got satirical political websites. There's a lot happening here. The newest project is called Kiss Me, Kill Me. We talked about it a few weeks ago with Casper Andreas, and holy cow, is there some excitement around this project right this very second. But first, David Michael Barrett, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Hey, Ken, how you doing?
I had to leave stuff out because you've written a lot.
I was listening to you talk about all those things, and I was actually surprised to hear all that my whole life story.
Usually at the end of This Is Your Life, we trot out all the people, but you just get to hear it all from me. It's just me. That's all you get. So much to discuss, sir. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Well, let's start with you and your background. You know, often we ask our singer-songwriters and our filmmakers, but for you, you're one of our great writers out there. Why the written word to get your voice out there?
Oh, I've just, you know, I mean, anybody that's a writer will tell you, I've been writing my whole life. It's who I am. I was born in Seattle. I grew up in L.A. I am one of the few people that really loves L.A. I love writing about L.A. It's such a crazy place because it's totally artificial. It's a desert.
Yeah.
So they irrigate it. They bring water in. And so it's, you know, I love sort of the thematic fact, you know, like it's sort of thematically fake,
yeah.
Which fits perfectly with what LA really is. So I think it's sort of the perfect venue, a place to write about crazy people. And I just, you know, it's just who I am. I mean, I wish I had some sort of other magic answer to say what makes somebody a writer.
Well, let me ask, are there some David Michael Barrett screenplays, high school screenplays that we could get our hands on?
High school ones?
What'd you write back then? I want to know.
When I was in high school, I was writing for the high school newspaper.
You were one of those high school newspaper people. We love those people. What was your role there on the newspaper?
I was the editor. I wasn't, you know, it's funny. I wasn't in drama class like everybody else. I wish I'd taken drama back then, but no, I never did.
What was the big expose there in the high school that you put out there and everyone's like, oh man, he's going to get kicked out?
I don't even remember. I think I was doing like editorials about Jerry Brown, who was our governor then. Who's our governor again?
Yes.
He was dating Linda Ronstadt at the time. I was fascinated by that.
I had no idea. I didn't even know that little piece of lore there in California.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Oh, I guess it's very well known now in California.
Okay.
Yeah, he dated Linda Ronstadt.
Who knew? Who knew?
You got around.
You know, we get so many listeners writing, and every time we have a writer on, David, they write in and say, yes, you know, I have such great stuff, but how can I possibly make a career out of this? Which begs the question, how can someone possibly make a career out of this?
Well, that is a really good question.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's really tough being a writer. You know, when you go to a cocktail party and you tell people you're a writer, and they're sort of, they give you this look of sort of equal parts jealousy and suspicion.
Yeah.
People are very kind of don't quite understand how people can be writers. The thing, though, I would say, though, about being a writer is that you have to write. You know, being a writer is one of those professions where you can kind of wake up one morning and say, hey, I'm a writer. And suddenly, you know, you tell the world you're a writer, the world thinks you're a writer, and, you know, if you don't back it up by writing, I mean, I write every day. That's part of who I am, part of what I do. I'm always working on something. Often I'm working on a couple things. And you have to just have it become part of who you are. And what you do over time is you not only refine your craft, you have enough material that you can, you know, you can either collaborate with new people, show them stuff you've worked on, always get your work out there, get feedback. Don't be afraid of hearing what people don't like about your writing, because I always find that if somebody has, you know, something, if something jumps out at them that just doesn't make sense or whatever, that might lead to a larger issue that can be resolved. I mean, I'm all about sort of the whole process.
Yeah.
And, you know, expressing my work and being true to my voice as a writer, but not letting ego or whatever get in the way of you know, either moving the project forward or really telling the best story that I can.
Nice. Now, I have to ask, this is, you know, apropos of almost nothing, did you actually get to meet Noah Wiley?
You know, I did meet Noah Wiley. I didn't meet him when I did the play, but I used to work at Warner Brothers for a producer when I was in my 20s, and we had an office on the lot, and our office was right across the way from where they shot ER.
Yeah, let me just stop you right there. If that were me, there's not a chance I'm getting any work done whatsoever.
Well, George Clooney would be like playing basketball right outside my office all day, every day. So, yeah, that was kind of a fun experience.
I'm Googling time machines as we talk about this right now. If there's any possibility that you and I could go back to that time together. I mean, we're talking, David, to the point where I was convinced it was a documentary and these were real procedures. Not proud of that. I'm not proud of that. Well, talk to me about, you know, especially for someone who writes screenplays, you put your work out there and then somebody else directs it, because you're not necessarily the director on these projects.
Right.
What is that process like for you? Are you on set?
Well,
are you thinking really hard?
Well,
that's not what I wrote.
With all three of my films, with Bad Actress and Such Good People, and with now coming up Kiss Me, Kill Me, I will be, I have been and will be the producer of the films. So, yes, I will be on the set. I will be, you know, intimately involved in every creative decision that's made in the movie. I mean, I have great respect for the director and his role and what he's trying to achieve. And, you know, of course, I love actors. And, you know, it's a different role being a producer than being a writer. But it's the whole process is really collaborative, and I really strive to work with people who share my vision as well as people who I really respect and really who are really talented, who are really going to do the best job bringing my screenplay to life. So it's, you know, I've really only had great experiences working with the people I've worked with, and I hope to continue to do that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of these films. As I said, I just watched Such Good People. I'm not even sure how I would describe the plot. There's a lot happening in this film.
Yes, there is.
How do you keep it straight in your head? You're the guy who wrote it.
Well, it's a conventional screwball comedy, and it's the plot is about this gay couple played by Randy Harrison from Queer as Folk and Michael Urie from Ugly Betty. They are a gay couple who are house-sitting for wealthy friends, and they discover a secret room filled with $1 million in it. And then their wealthy friends die, and they have to figure out the right thing to do with the money. And then they get seduced by the money, and they get into all this trouble, and then, you know, they get out of all this trouble. And it's a very lighthearted, very, you know, feel-good movie, and we were very lucky that we were able to get this fantastic cast. I mean, we got Scott Wolf from Party of Five, and Anna Ortiz from Devious Maids, and Tom Lenk from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and Lance Bass, Alec Moppa, Drew Drogi. I mean, we got these amazing actors, gay actors, straight comedy people like Rick Overton, who's a comedic genius.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it was one of those rare projects where we got very lucky, where we were able to bring together this super talented group of people. Stuart Wade, who directed it, did this phenomenal job. I produced the movie with Stuart and with David Avalone, who was also our editor, who also did an amazing job. And the three of us, you know, it was just really one of the best experiences I've had in filmmaking. And, you know, I couldn't be more proud of the film. And yeah, it is kind of crazy. It's a crazy story. I'll say that.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, a couple things just watching your two lead actors, two things that were occurring to me at the same time. One is, you know, really, really shallow, and then there's the one that complements your writing. We'll start with the one that complements your writing, and I know that this is a goal of yours. I love that there's just two gay characters in the movie, and it's not about them being gay, and it's not about their coming out process. It's just normalizing that there's this relationship. On the other hand, they're just so pretty, David. And so I'm looking at Michael and Randy and thinking, oh, I want to be friends with this couple so badly.
Oh, that's very sweet. Yes, they are very handsome gentlemen, both of them, exactly. I mean, we approached our little movie as if we were doing studio movie. And, you know, movies are filled with beautiful people, and we wanted, you know, the most talented people first, and if they happen to be beautiful, we thought that was a plus. And then one of the things that sort of, for myself as a writer, that I really strive to is to tell stories with gay characters, but not have the stories necessarily be gay stories.
Yeah.
To really kind of take what I consider LGBT cinema and sort of take it to the next level, which, you know, this is just my own personal take, which is these are people that happen to be gay.
Yeah.
And that isn't, I mean, with all due respect to all the coming out stories and all the other stories about being gay, and those are really important stories to be told. But I, for me, as a filmmaker, as a writer, I like to tell stories where, you know, it just happens to be a comedy and the two characters just happen to be gay. I mean, I could have very easily done the movie with a straight couple in the lead,
right,
for Such Good People. And, you know, you're not the first person to bring this up, but not just because I'm gay, but I think that it just would make it just in every way a less interesting movie, a less interesting story, because we've seen that so many times.
So many times.
You know, and so the fact that they're a gay couple, I mean, Such Good People, you know, the title is supposed to be ironic. The title is ironic. You know, they're not good people. They're sort of after this money. And I mean, at the end of the day, they are, you know, everybody in the movie is a decent person. There's nobody who's truly horrible in it. It's comedy. But they're just as bad as the straight people. You know, there's a straight couple in the movie who are played by these amazingly talented actors, Kerry Wieda and James Urbaniak. And they're kind of our villains. But, you know, I mean, depending on your perspective, you know, you ask them, the gay couple are the villains. So,
right,
like you said, when we were talking earlier, you said, they're not being nice, they're being gay. So
that's my favorite line of the movie. Let's repeat it one more time. A character says about them, they're not being nice, they're being gay. I love
it. Right. So, you know, I mean, it's and then with Kiss Me, Kill Me, this new movie that I'm doing with Casper Andreas, the same thing applies. It's a murder mystery. It's like a contemporary Alfred Hitchcock, Agatha Christie whodunit, where there are gay characters in the film. But is it a gay story? Is the story about their sexuality? No, it's a murder mystery. And it just happens to have gay characters. And I really think audiences are ready for this. I mean,
oh yeah.
You know, I have gone to endless LGBT film festivals. I support every single one of them. You know, the one in LA is fantastic, Outfest. And, you know, I don't like, you know, the experience of having a great time at the film festival and then going to see the centerpiece film where it's, you know, like the dad doesn't accept the son, and it's just like, it just kind of brings down the whole evening.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, there's a place for those movies, of course, but I think that we have to sort of go beyond that.
Yeah.
Especially with where television is gone, with Glee and all the shows that feature gay characters today on television, it isn't, you know, it's like, we've kind of grown past that, I think.
I think we have. Yeah, the movies definitely do need to catch up. You know, they're just not where television is, and there is a place for some of those films. And happily, at this point, they're in high school health classes. You know, I think that's kind of where some of those belong, so that we can educate the youth. But at the same time, for other audiences, I would like to see a little bit more normalization, that's not the central plot point. Can we agree, before we leave Such Good People behind, that the true heroes of Such Good People are indeed the porpoises, the people of the sea? Are we agreed on that?
Sure, why not?
Okay. People need to go watch the movie to understand.
Lance Bass runs an organization called The Porpoise Purpose with Mitch Silpa, who's an amazing character actor and an old friend of mine. Definitely. The Porpoise Purpose.
They are the real ones. All right. Now, we're moving on to Kiss Me, Kill Me. When we last talked about this project, we had Casper Andreas on the show a few weeks ago, and there was an ambitious Kickstarter goal. What was the original goal of the Kickstarter campaign?
We're trying to raise $100,000.
Okay, so the ambitious goal was $100,000, and at the end of the interview, I said to Casper, I have no doubt in my mind that you will be able to raise this. Casper, in very not typical Swedish fashion, was a little downtrodden about it, but he certainly had some doubts, and I said, no, you will see. What was the result of that campaign for the edification of both me and my audience?
The result was a huge success.
Yeah.
We raised almost $132,000.
$132,000.
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
How do you wrap your mind around that?
Well, it's a little crazy, I have to say. It's amazing and fantastic, and we're thrilled. And we are now headed into production on this film. So we couldn't be happier. But I will tell you that Kickstarter is quite a challenging experience. Anybody who's ran a Kickstarter campaign will back me up on this. That, you know, it's a 30-day campaign, and you set your own goal, and if you don't meet your goal, then you don't get anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the middle of the month, it was a 30-day campaign, in the middle of the month, we had, you know, a couple weeks where we were, you know, it was just going slow. It was always sort of going, you know, people were always donating more and more, but, you know, it was a very nervous experience, a very nervous month. It was, it was the last week or so, it just kind of took off, and we just were just, you know, thrilled and exhilarated. There were a lot of people that helped us with this campaign.
Yeah.
And we're very grateful to everybody. We had a team of people helping us with social media. We had our entire cast. We had this amazing cast, starting with Gail Harold and Willem Belli and Van Hansis and Tom Lankingham, who was in Such Good People, and you know, Brianna Brown. We have a whole amazing cast, and they were all supporting us with this experience, and you know, as well as Casper Andreas himself and me, we were all, you know, sort of emailing people and tweeting about it. And you know, so yes, it's very easy on the outside to look at it and go, oh, it was just, you know, just going to happen. But it was a lot of outreach, really. And honestly, we're just really thrilled that everybody was so receptive to our project and our message, and that everybody kind of got behind the movie and supported it. I wrote the script as well, and it's a really fun ride. I think people are going to love the film, and I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, so exciting. Well, you wrote a piece for the Huffington Post called "The Kickstarter Diet: Will It Kiss Me or Kill Me?" And there's a couple pieces
exactly.
I want. Yeah. Well, there's a couple pieces I want to talk about. There are a couple pieces I want to talk about that piece. You wrote this quote, and this is, as you just said, there's also something truly remarkable about the risk. The way Kickstarter works is if you don't reach your goal, you get nothing. So it creates urgency for your project that is real. So real is this stress that at this very moment, I'm on what I call the Kickstarter diet. I can eat whatever I want, and I still lose weight. But in truth, the funding goal inspires you to be all in, you must literally be willing to risk failure in order to achieve success. And I think that that really resonated with a lot of folks. I mean, certainly there were some comments on the piece, but it was shared quite a bit as well, that we're in this whole crowdsource funding age of everybody getting involved, but it's not just an aspect of big old community building. There's real risk here.
Well, I mean, the risk is you know, first of all, the campaign was a success, so I'm no longer on the Kickstarter diet.
Okay.
And I'm gaining weight again.
Oh, good. I was worried.
Which is really annoying. I should start another Kickstarter campaign. But I mean, listen, you know, the risk, at the end of the day, the risk, right? The risk is failure. I mean, and that's the risk of everything that's worth doing.
Yeah.
Guys. I mean, you know, as a writer, I'm a nobody. The fact that these people, these amazing actors, want to be a part of my movie is just blows my mind. I'm so incredibly honored and thrilled. And, you know, we built this package, we put it sort of out there to the world, and we said, hey, you know, do you want to be a part of it? And everybody, you know, sort of responded back positively, and it's tremendous. I mean, it's a tremendous thing. And, you know, the only way you can succeed at a Kickstarter campaign is if you really kind of do put yourself out there to the world, to all your friends and family on Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, I mean, so, yeah, I mean, the project could have not happened, and it wouldn't have been the end of the world. We would have all, you know, gone on and done other things or been fine. But, you know, it's so hard to get a movie made, and it's so hard. You know, Casper and I looked at this whole Kickstarter campaign almost as if it was its own little production. And we, you know, we cast it, we made, you know, presented this video, created artwork, I mean, the whole sort of approach to it. And we looked at this as a great opportunity for not just us, but for our cast and for people who like movies like this. And so, you know, we didn't want to not succeed at this. We wanted to, you know, we were going to do this. So we thought, well, let's really do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a daunting and terrifying and at the same time, exhilarating experience, but it's, you know, it is, I did lose weight. I'll tell you that.
There you go. It's the diet we all need to go on, apparently. Now, you did say in the first sentence, and this is so intriguing for me because it comes up over and over and over again on our show. The first sentence right there, quote, "The sad truth of gay film these days is the studios still want little to do with us, and there's not much money for gay indie films either."
Right.
And we've had a ton of out filmmakers on the show who are trying to put this content out there who echo that sentiment. Do you see it getting better? And I guess even more importantly,
no.
What do we need to do?
Mean, it all depends. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I think we're doing what we need to do. I mean, part of the new paradigm of gay indie filmmaking is Kickstarter. That's a part of it. It's here to stay. And that's what I was writing in the Huffington Post. But I think that, you know, it all depends on the project. And there probably are a handful of unique ideas out there that a studio might be interested in regarding gay characters and everything.
Right.
But it's not like the African American community, you know, where you could have a Tyler Perry or African American niche films that a studio will produce and they'll go on and make millions of dollars. Gay films, the real reason is, it's two reasons. One, but the real reason is it's less of a reason that they don't want to deal with us because we're gay. I think that's less of a reason. I mean, TV proves that they do want to deal with us because we're all over TV. But the real reason is that gay movies tend to not make a lot of money.
Right.
So I don't know why that is. It just is. I mean, there's a very – I don't know of any situation where there's been a big breakout gay, you know, my big fat Greek wedding, my big fat gay wedding. That hasn't happened yet. I mean, there's been movies like, you know, The Birdcage
right.
or Philadelphia or – there was The Kids Are All Right, which is a fantastic drama, and that made some money, I think. But like some big blockbuster gay film, or even as much as the African American, you know, in terms of a segment of the audience, that just doesn't seem to happen. And And sort of until that does happen, studios aren't going to, they're not going to be interested in us.
Right.
And I think that that's, you know, I mean, it would be great if they did, but it's not the end of the world. I mean, there are other options and other ways to tell our stories, and it's really kind of up to us. And that's what's so amazing about Kickstarter and crowdfunding and Indiegogo, that we do now have this ability to raise money sort of through our the fans of our project or the LGBT community themselves. One of the things I also said in that article is that, you know, it's like the LGBT community can personally greenlight projects they want to see.
It's amazing.
Stories they want to have be told. So, you know, it's not like when I was growing up where there was just zero gay content.
Yeah.
The gay people were the butt of a joke if they showed up at all, or just it was unthinkable that somebody would be, you know, portrayed as a gay character, as just a regular person. You know, it's just unthinkable where we are today from where we were then.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that as we move forward, things will change and progress, and maybe a studio will be interested in funding, taking a chance on a movie.
All for that.
And, you know, it, so much of it depends on casting. I think that the what used to be called a stigma about playing a gay character still does exist, but not to the same degree that it did in the past. So that's a good thing in terms of attracting big talent to a part. But, yeah, I mean, the reality is, you know, it still is what it is. And that things are changing.
But I love the idea that we can support these projects. And by the way, should someone be listening and think, well, gosh, I just totally missed out on that $130,000+ Kickstarter campaign, they can still play along, can they not?
Yes, actually. So the campaign just ended last week. This is for Kiss Me, Kill Me, the murder mystery that I'm doing with Casper Andreas. And we ran this Kickstarter campaign. And if you still are interested in getting in on some of our – we have these all these amazing perks. In fact, we still have one speaking part that we were giving out as a perk. If somebody's interested in any of our perks, including that one, they can go to kissmekillmemovie.com, kissmekillmemovie.com, and they can see all the links to what the Kickstarter perks were, and they can, if they have a question about if any of them are still available, they can email us, or they can just donate and claim one of the perks. Through the end of the month. And, you know, that's an amazing thing also. So,
very exciting.
You know, we're very excited about that.
Well, two quick pieces of ephemera for you. Now, you have very casually, and I know that you listened to the interview with Casper and I. So
yes, I did.
Knowing that, and hearing some of our conversation, you have very casually, twice, because I was keeping track, dropped a name into this interview that you're doing with me right now, as if it was not going to set my heart aflutter. I have a quick three-part question for you. Question number one, is there room in Kiss Me, Kill Me for Tom Lenk's character to have a husband? Question two, can I be his husband? And question three, can we have that continue off the set?
Well... Tom Lenk is amazing. Tom Lenk is in Such Good People, and Tom Lenk is in Kiss Me, Kill Me. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Tom's.
Yeah, me too.
His character in Kiss Me, Kill Me, I believe the character is single.
Okay.
I believe. That's all I'm going to say about
it. Is there some wiggle room there? I feel that as the writer, I mean, Casper, sure, he could direct me in, but you as the writer might object.
You know,
could write me right into this.
It's very funny because I'm doing actually a rewrite on that script right now.
Uh-huh.
So I, in fact, could write you in to the movie. And did I mention that we have these perks still available?
I'm just saying, I feel like you've been kept up at night thinking there is something missing. And what is missing is Tom Lenk's husband, and he is currently in Cleveland.
So why are you such a fan of Tom Lenk?
I Love Tom Lyke. I mean, I'm a huge Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, so I certainly knew him from there. But I've seen him in so many small indie projects, and I have friends who are in Scream the Musical, which he's in, and so many fun different pieces of ephemera with him. But I'm also just kind of an avid Facebook follower, which I love is the modern way of saying stalker. And he's just got this fun sensibility to him, and a little bit of snarkiness, and a little bit of irreverency. And you know, I'm not sure if I'm making this clear. I'm a huge fan of Tom Lanks.
Yes, well, so am I. I think the world of him. He's a great guy and super talented, and we're really lucky to have him in the movie. And I think he's going to be great in the film. I really do.
I have no doubt.
He's great in Such Good People.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll see what I can do. You know, I'll work on that for you.
I would appreciate that. And then the last piece of ephemera before we close, I learned this right before the interview. It turns out that you are known, like, throughout the world as being a gay Swede magnet. Is there any truth to that?
Oh, that's hilarious. You're just being silly. I'm working now with Kasper Andreas, who's Swedish, and I'm working with another film producer who's this amazing guy who's also Swedish. And it's very funny. It's very funny that I'm sort of surrounded by all these Swedes, and you know, I love them. I mean, they're amazing people, and you know, it's not such a bad thing.
Yeah, it's what we would call a resume builder. So I would put that right on your LinkedIn, gay Swede magnet, 2014 to present. I would put it in there.
I think I may have to go to Stockholm one day.
There you go. There you go. You already have a built-in fan base. Built-in fan base.
That's right.
Well, everybody needs to stroll on over to Kiss Me, Kill Me movie. And again, there's opportunities for you to get involved. And what are we looking at timeline-wise? What's the goal here?
The whole film. Well, we're gonna go into. We have to still figure out exactly when we're gonna shoot the film.
Okay.
It's gonna be very soon, though.
Good.
I can tell you that. And then you know that we're gonna go through post-production. So hopefully mid-year next year we'll have a completed film, and you know, we can start showing up in film festivals, which would be really exciting.
Well, you must hereby promise you and Kasper will come back on the show when we're ready to release the film, and we'll hype it even more.
Yeah.
All for it. All for it. Well, let me tell you something, sir. I watch Such Good People. I'm so excited to watch Kiss Me, Kill Me. You're putting content out there that really is in demand. And as much as we can lament the fact that studios may not be financing these indie LGBT projects, I love that you know that there's so many of us out there who are clamoring for it, who want to see our experiences up on the screen, not as a plot point, but just normalized in the course of some farcical movie, you know, something where it's a murder mystery, whatever it may be, to see ourselves up there in the way that we see other communities up there. And you are providing us with that opportunity, accessibility, and it's so important. So we all thank you for that, sir.
Well, I believe in it. I think it's a really important thing for the gay community and for people in general to see what gay people are like.
Absolutely.
You know? I wish that we had had this huge breadth of gay content for me to watch when I was a kid.
Me too.
I mean,
how
the world, I mean, I cannot even conceive of what my life is today when I was a kid. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's really amazing that this does exist now.
I love it. I love it. Again, everyone, Kiss Me, Kill Me, the movie. Go over there and get a speaking part. The part of Tom Lanks' husband already taken, David Michael Barrett.
DVDs and digital downloads and a whole bunch of stuff, you know, not just the speaking part.
Yeah, all that stuff, too. I just want to – I'm just staking my territory. I am just staking my territory. David Michael Barrett, what an absolute treat having you on the show. All the best with this project.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks, and we are back. I'm Ken.
And I'm Becca.
And we're up in the attic, probably for the last time, because I'm
a little bit chilly up here.
Right,
you should have grabbed a blanket. I'm sitting here wrapped up like a little Eskimo.
Gay news warms me. I don't need a blanket. So you and I mean, I feel like it was just an hour and a half ago that we sobered up from last week's episode, so...
You're such an exaggerator.
That's what we do here on the Gay Show. All right, so much news to talk about. Are you ready?
I can't wait.
Okay. Were you a Real World watcher? Did you guys even have a TV growing up?
Yes, we did have a television.
Okay.
I was an Amish. What kind of question is that?
There's a degree to which I think that you guys were like an NPR family. It's like we're all gathered around.
No,
listening to NPR.
We definitely, and I felt like I wasn't supposed to watch Real World when I was younger.
Okay.
So I would like sneak watch it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how far back do you remember with Real World?
Do you mean like with characters?
Well,
cities?
Like which season? Do you were you a watcher for San Francisco with Puck and Pedro?
I remember Puck, absolutely. He was a train wreck.
He was a train wreck. Well, it is actually, this is how crazy it is. This week is the 20th anniversary of the death of Pedro Zamora, who was the HIV positive guy. I almost said character because, you know, it's
right,
reality
show,
television.
Right,
but
yeah.
Back then, that was...
Has it been 20 years?
It's been 20 years.
Oh, my god!
It's been 20 years. And that was season 3 of The Real World, and that's back before it was such a cultural zeitgeist thing that you went on to get fame, necessarily.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
it was, like, really early days
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't so scripted, and Pedro was a huge influence on me. And we've actually talked
in
about it.
In what way?
Oh, man. To have someone gay on there... And the first season, there was a bisexual guy, Norm, in the first original New York season, and that was big. And then the second season was LA, and not so much a lot going on there. But then the third season, you had this guy who was gay, Pedro.
Mm-hmm.
He was also HIV positive and just out there educating.
Yeah.
And he passed away. I think he passed away right before the premiere. It was pretty crazy.
Oh, it hadn't even
no,
aired
it hadn't
yet.
Even aired yet. It
oh,
hadn't
I didn't
even
realize
aired yet.
That. Wow.
And President Clinton, I remember this, actually went on national TV and gave a speech remembering Pedro Zamora.
Wow.
Can you see President Obama going on there and remembering someone who passes away from, like, Survivor? You know,
that's
like,
amazing,
it was
right?
such a big deal. So 20
yeah.
years.
Unbelievable.
I'm not sure how I feel about that 20 years thing. Not
it's
good.
It's only 2 decades.
Yeah, it's 2 whole decades. All right, would you like some local news or some national news first?
Hit me with what you got.
Okay.
What feels good?
We'll start with local.
Okay.
When a company dedicated to serving its community as a provider of accurate news and information denigrates members of that community in its reporting, that company becomes the news instead of merely reporting on it. And when it happens again, after local and national advocates have publicly shamed and ridiculed the publication for its reporting on that minority population, that is also news. That is the case right now with the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Now, I hear things about the Plain Dealer. I suspect or I hear that it's not perhaps the most respectable news source.
Really?
Do you hear good things about the Plain Dealer?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
There's some really anti-Plain Dealer people out there.
I haven't run into them. I feel like the Plain Dealer is a nice publication.
Okay.
They seem to be, you know, fairly bipartisan. They seem to be a very classy newspaper. They are our only newspaper.
I actually have heard really negative things. And maybe in particular, it's because the way that they cover LGBT issues doesn't go so well for the LGBT community.
Okay.
So maybe that's one of their weaknesses.
Do you have an example?
Sure do. That would be this week. So what's going on in Cleveland right now is that for our listeners who don't know, there's a lot of drama happening in Cleveland right now where the city is attempting to pass an ordinance, which is a standard non-discrimination ordinance aimed at ensuring equal access to public accommodations for citizens regardless of sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, mm-hmm. and several other protected characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
So the text of the ordinance reads like this: the city of Cleveland and employers should allow full access to facilities without qualifications to all citizens and employees, including those denied access to bathrooms, showers, locker rooms, or dressing facilities consistent with their gender identity or expression.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Cleveland Plain Dealer turned around and their headline was, Cleveland's transgender-friendly legislation would open all public restrooms and showers to both sexes, which is actually not in any way what that would do.
Not that's not accurate reporting right
it's
there.
It's not accurate reporting, and in fact, it's kind of fear-mongering, and now there is a fevered pitch in certain parts of Cleveland. So at the day of this recording, it's Wednesday today, there was a hearing today, and just hundreds and hundreds of people showed up. It was supposed to be at 1:30 p.m. I was going to go today at 1:30 p.m., but then they told everyone, you have to get there at noon, because the opposition is mobilizing like crazy, because they don't want men in women's bathrooms. Because that's what the Cleveland Plain Dealer told them was going to happen.
Gosh, you know, and you're totally right when you use the word fear-mongering. And that's the problem I have with the news of any media outlet.
Right.
It is all about generating fear, and that's how they get ratings, and it's so frustrating. People want to hear the facts, and you get this, like, overinflated version of stories just to get people riled up and get them worked up and sell papers or get ratings on the news. It's absolutely frustrating.
Crazy. It's crazy. So, yes, it is not accurate to say that this legislation would open all public restrooms and showers to both sexes.
Men and women, use whatever you want.
And they wrote an editorial. There was an editorial about it, and that wasn't good. So I'm actually really gratified to hear, and I will take that with me outside of this freezing cold attic, that the Plain Dealer does have a good reputation, because I've heard negative things. But I'm realizing now it's specifically around coverage of LGBT issues.
This is the first I've heard of this.
So we're going to do some investigating.
So, yeah, we're both learning something
here. We'll do some investigating.
Yeah.
On the marriage equality front, a federal judge struck down South Carolina's same-sex marriage ban just this week. The judge placed his ruling on hold while the state decides whether to appeal, and I'm sure they will appeal. But now South Carolina joins the 34, 35 states that have struck down their same-sex marriage bans, which puts us here in Ohio in even more of a minority. I mean, we're hanging out right now with Mississippi and Arkansas.
That's awesome company, isn't it?
We're hanging out right now with Mississippi and Arkansas.
it's pretty discouraging.
By the way, listeners, if you're in Mississippi and Arkansas, we love you. We love
you. Nothing against Mississippi and Arkansas.
Against some of the legislation and some of the political climate in those.
Against the people of Mississippi and Arkansas.
So there's that. Now, Texas, which, by the way, we're also hanging out with Texas.
Texas.
We're hanging out with Texas. Mm-hmm. Texas State Senator Donna Campbell has introduced a measure that would allow business owners and services to refuse to serve LGBT customers if doing so would violate their religious beliefs. Thank God for all the bakers there, because that's who we talk about every week. This is the second time that Campbell has tried to pass such a resolution. The 2013 resolution was backed by Texas Values, which, of course, is an anti-gay group, because it has to be if it's called Texas Values.
Yeah.
It was nearly identical to her new legislation, which is Senate Joint Resolution 10. It was filed this week, the first day lawmakers could file bills in advance of their legislative session, which begins in January. And here's what the bill reads. Government may not burden an individual's or religious organization's freedom of religion or right to act or refuse to act in a manner motivated by a sincerely held religious belief unless the government proves that the burden is in furtherance of a compelling governmental interest. And it says more than that. I'll just put that out there. I was going to read more, but let's just stop right there. I guess what I want to say about this, first of all, you're crazy, because you're just killing your own tourism, because you're going to be known as the state that won't serve gay people.
Sure.
And by the way, you have Austin, so you might want to rethink that.
Right, because you have that Austin. One little island. Now, wait, do you think that the majority of businesses, I mean, you kind of say that as if the majority of businesses would use their right.
Oh, no, no. Oh, no, not at all. I just think that what I'm in awe of is that, so this is, it's day one of when you can introduce legislation, and State Senator Donna Campbell, with everything going on in the state, certainly in the country, but with the economy, feels that this is the most important thing for her to focus on.
Right. Yeah, she shouldn't worry about, like, immigration or anything.
No.
She should be worrying about
No immigration problems there in the Texas. We are worried about people not being able to deny business goods and whatnot to gay people. It's just crazy.
It's crazy.
It reminds me of a certain now United States congressman who's from the great state of Wisconsin. And please tune into last week's show so you can learn all about him. He's our buddy. I miss him already. We got some great feedback. We actually had some folks write in and say, oh my gosh, that was real. That was real. He is now United States congressman. Now, this was so random. So I love the Huffington Post Gay Voices section, because they'll just throw something out there that is in the Gay Voices section that I am like, oh my God, that's so interesting. And then I think, why is that gay?
Mm.
So this was today's. This was the headline, brace yourself, Bette Midler wants to make Hocus Pocus 2. Now, obviously, Bette Midler, gay icon.
100%. 100%. So maybe that's the appeal.
That is the appeal.
I don't even care. I'm pumped. I don't care where they post that under Huffington Post. I'm pumped about that.
Now, I will tell you, I have never seen Hocus Pocus.
Well, guess what? It's never too late. This is why we have Netflix.
We are slightly... I don't know if it's on Netflix. We should look that up.
We're
going to
find it somewhere. If we're going to get a VHS player in this home, we're going to watch it.
I actually have... Oh, no, I gave those away when I moved here. I actually had boxes and boxes of VHS. Yeah, no, I had tons. I think that there's something slightly generational there. I'm a few years older than you. Not many. Mm-hmm. Not many. Mm-hmm. But I think that Hocus Pocus is a little bit more your generation than mine.
That's very much probably true. Yeah. That's probably very
true. I'm looking it up right now. Unfortunately, Hocus Pocus is unavailable to stream there on the Netflix.
Oh, my gosh.
So it
I'm
is
writing
available.
A letter.
You should write
Dear
a letter.
Netflix.
And now they're not going to show that in Texas because they would be supporting gay people.
Maybe only in Austin.
It's possible. It's possible. My favorite company in the whole wide world, that would be Big Gay Ice Cream. Do you know Big Gay Ice Cream?
Nope.
I love that.
Tell me more.
I
thought your favorite was Vitamix.
I do enjoy the Vitamix, though I fear that I broke it, and so we should probably focus on that.
We could put Big Gay Ice Cream in the Vitamix.
We could make Big Gay Ice Cream.
Milkshakes for days.
Yes. Well, we can make gay ice cream, and if we eat enough of it, we will be Big Gay Ice Cream. Very quickly. So just wanted to report out to everyone that Big Gay Ice Cream can now be found in the upstairs bar of the Ace Hotel in L.A.
What's up? All right.
It was just an opportunity to say there's a company out there called Big Gay Ice Cream, and it just makes me very happy. I should get the people from Big Gay Ice Cream on the show.
Get them on the phone.
Get them on the show.
Yeah.
Now, another Ohio story. This one is just so screwed up, so screwed up. Last week, a stranger punched Cole Ledford in the face for kissing his boyfriend on the sidewalk, but the Ohio State University junior has a message for his attacker, quote, love is louder than hate, and this went crazy viral. He tweeted this out. It went out with more than 34,000 retweets. And this is what he said, and it's him with quite the fat lip.
Oh, got
yeah,
quite
he,
the goose egg
he,
there on
he
his
got,
face.
Yeah, he got punched. He got punched.
He sure did.
He said this, quote, I'm sorry that you called me a fag. I'm sorry you hit me for no reason. I'm sorry whatever insecurities you have don't allow you to accept others for who they are. I'm sorry I threaten you. I'm not sorry I'm gay. I'm proud to be this way. I'm proud to be confident enough to love who I love and to love me. I'm proud to have friends and family that love me regardless of me. Honestly, I'm not sorry. Becca's doing a fist pump.
You can't see it, but I am fist pumping.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Good for him.
Pretty good.
Good for him.
Ledford told the Huffington Post that he contacted Ohio State's bias assessment and response team, tasked with responding to hate and bias-related incidents after the assault. By the way, Ohio State has a bias assessment and response team and hate and bias-related incidents. The state of Ohio does not, so yay that we have little bastions of safety here.
Uh-huh.
The team responded with a message of support saying it would look into the incident, but Ledford expressed his doubt that the attacker, a complete stranger, would be found. Instead, he hopes to be able to work with the organization to promote tolerance in the student community. In the hours and days that followed, Ledford received an outpouring of love from the internet and certainly from us here on this show. It's
good,
so gay.
Look at him.
Look at him. Kissing his boyfriend. I love it. I love it.
I love it too.
So there's that. Hey, over in Brazil, you know, I feel like every morning when I wake up, you know, you're right there saying, but what's going on in Brazil?
Always.
Always.
Knocking down your door.
The population of São Paulo has already heard about a number of culprits to blame for the dramatic drought and water shortages in the state this year. But one legislator in Bahia, Brazil's fourth most populous state, claims to have unraveled the mystery surrounding the real reason for the lack of rain in São Paulo, and he has identified it as, of course, the gay pride parade.
The gay people.
Yes. Well, the lawman in question, his name is Pastor Sargento Isidorio. He decided to immortalize his argument on video to banish any doubt that he truly does believe it, and he quoted Bible passages to back it up. He said this, quote, when the skies close up and there is no rain because the people have sinned against you, here I'm talking about the big gay pride parade that takes place in San Paulo. The largest gay parade in the world is there. It's the first sign of the spilling of the chalice of God's wrath due to homosexuality in our Brazil. He then invited people of all religions to pray for 5 days on behalf of San Paolo's residents because, according to him, it is extremely important for the development of the country and the inhabitants must not pay for the sin of the gay population. What we need to do, there are sound effects that I clearly need to add. We clearly need a Becca's head is in her hand sound effect so they know, and a Becca is pumping her fist. It was, for this story, the former rather than the latter.
Oh, man.
It's not good.
Oh,
it's not
just,
good.
It's almost comedic.
And yet.
And yet. This exists in our life.
According to Bahia Noticias, the president of the Bahia gay rights group, Marcelo Cerquera, I would also like to pause here and apologize to everyone's name who I just butchered. He says the pastor's allegations only speak to his, quote, ignorant voter base. Cerqueira said this, quote, I believe that for one who claims to have biblical knowledge to say something this outrageous can only lead us to believe that he is a false prophet sowing lies and errant interpretations of the Bible.
Oh, heavens to Betsy.
Right?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I just can't.
For all those who agree with Pastor Isidorio and his supporters, the Huffington Post leaves you with this. When the drought started, Brazilian YouTube troupe Po Na Roda responded with a social media campaign encouraging users to, I don't even think I can say that on the air. So let's just say that there was a hashtag. It was pretty funny. and it was something that people could do in order to solve the water crisis.
You know what? The Bible also says that you can't eat shellfish or get divorced.
Right?
And he's not blaming those people.
Oh, I've never had shellfish.
Oh my God. I was eating oysters in Philadelphia last weekend. Delicious.
I think we're the combo platter because you've had shellfish and I'm divorced. So we're all set here on Fur Avenue.
Blame us for any drought.
Right? Can I just, we can confirm, I can't say that hashtag, right? I don't
what
think that
it?
I can.
Is,
it's right there,
looking?
Hashtag, right where the cursor is.
I don't want to say it out loud.
Yeah, I'm not saying
I'm
it either.
Okay.
So it's a way to solve the water crisis. And their tagline is, gays are doing their part to save water. Are you? We'll just leave that there. And finally, over at Dartmouth, we love Dartmouth. Dartmouth college students are defending their hijack of a question and answer period with Texas Governor
gosh,
Rick Perry.
I
didn't see this.
Oh,
I just,
my gosh.
We need a new sound effect for Becca banging her head against the water pipe. Banging her head against the water pipe. Yes, they did ask Rick Perry if he would have anal sex for $102 million. The audience of primarily college Republicans booed at that particular question and others, such as, quote, does your ideal anti-sodomy law prevent me from playing with my own poop shoot? And another question, quote, I know you have been very strong on all foreign policy issues, including Somali pirates, but what is your stance on butt pirates? I love that I could read that, but I couldn't read the hashtag from Brazil.
It's so I feel like I have two different versions of myself looking at this story. So the 12-year-old version of myself that is always going to have a 12-year-old boy sense of humor thinks this is the silliest, funniest thing in the entire world.
Right.
The adult side of me is like, okay, maybe an actual discussion is more productive than that. But the thought of him just being so uncomfortable and not even knowing how to handle that makes me giggle a little bit.
Now, we will put out there that it has been released. There were 11 sample questions. Only a few of them were asked. There were some others that did not get asked, like question number 9. You have recently been involved in a corruption scandal. Would you like to have anal sex with me later? That one's funny. Question number 10. Recently in San Francisco, you explained that being gay is like being an alcoholic. Would you like to get drunk and have sex with me later?
Like, I feel like this would be so hilarious if it was like an Onion article. But the fact that it actually happened, I just can't even read this one. I just can't.
Question 11, and this is about as boundary pushing as I will do tonight, which is saying a lot. You have recently said that homosexuality tears at the fabric of society.
Oh, I know what's coming. I read this already.
If I showed you hard science that anal sex does not tear at the fabric of your butthole, would you change your mind?
I have earmuffs on. There's another sound effect.
It's so bad. Oh my gosh, I'm reading all of them. I want to ask all of them right now. If new documents reveal, this is question number 3, if new documents reveal that Jesus liked to, I can't even,
no,
okay.
No, moving on.
I should have read that one all the way through. At that time, I did not.
How about this weather, huh?
It's getting colder. It's going to snow.
Supposedly.
We could collect the snow and put in some vanilla extract, and I think with a little soy milk, and we would have big gay ice cream.
Your logic is slightly skewed, but I love your optimism.
What else do we need? I feel like that was all we needed.
Where's the heavy? You need heavy cream. You need sugar. You gotta make,
not
like,
in the Vitamix. The Vitamix doesn't need those things.
It creates it out of magic.
I would like to take this opportunity to remind our listening audience that if you have a Vitamix, please use the lid. Please use the lid, because you could have a mishap.
This is our update on the Vitamix.
Yes.
Oops-a-daisy.
We should have a Vitamix update every week and all the things that we're doing. But we did make a couple things before that happened.
I made roasted parsnip soup.
You did.
It was delicious.
It was good.
Yeah, it was really good.
It's not my thing.
I love it.
No, I knew it was your thing. I thought that I was like, oh, I like this, and I normally wouldn't like something like
that. Your melon soup was good.
The melon soup was good, but it was basically like a smoothie, I'm convinced at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we want to give a shout-out this week. So we do get really great emails. And I don't always take the time to read them, and I want to take the time to read this one. And so I just want to remind you guys, you can have your email read on the air. We would love to give you a shout-out. If there's some sort of event that you have coming up, we'll shout that out too. So just send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. And this was from a new listener, Todd. He wrote this: I grew up in Brecksville listening to a radio show called Gay Waves that was broadcast from Cleveland State University back in the late 80s. It was my touchstone to the gay community then, as I sat in my bedroom listening on headphones so my parents couldn't hear, God forbid. So your show instantly brought back that memory, which was great, and then I couldn't stop listening. It was so informative without being preachy and fun and really smart, and I didn't want to let the opportunity to tell you slip away.
Oh,
how lovely was that?
That's awesome.
And he's got a project coming up that we will be featuring. But yeah, no,
we
it was...
We should send him some buttons or stickers
or
something.
We should send him a magnet.
Yeah.
We should send him a magnet. So he said, thanks for all of the hard work you put into doing what you do. So
wonderful.
They really do. Look, it actually is a lot of work to put this show together. And
I witnessed some of this.
So I will just tell you guys, you know, we love hearing from you. Sometimes I forget that people are actually listening, much less 30, 40,000 people listening every week. So any feedback that you have or just saying hi, I love it. It keeps us going. It keeps us going.
Yeah.
So please send that on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Definitely want to thank David Michael Barrett for being on the show. Again, strolling over to kissmekillmemovie.com, and they still have some perks left. Their Kickstarter campaign was successfully funded for $130,000.
Unbelievable.
Crowdsource funding, folks. Do it. It's apparently a really good diet because it's very stressful, but you can get your project funded and everyone can be a part of it. We also do want to do a quick shout out to Tig Notaro. You want to do it?
I'm so hoping that she's pulling through. She's in the hospital at the moment. Did you know that?
I absolutely did not know that.
What are we shouting out to Tig
for?
I
was doing for the topless performance that she
did.
Oh,
my gosh. Yes. That was amazing. She's been on tour. So she just left a Philadelphia show, had a cyst burst, major internal bleeding, supposedly doing fine. She was able to post online that she's doing okay. But that topless performance, unbelievably
so cool.
Awesome.
Somebody
in the audience shouted something about, like, take your shirt off as a joke. And she did. And
she
obviously she's had the double mastectomy. She's scarred and she just puts it out there. She has handled her breast cancer so gracefully. I respect her. I put her on a pedestal. I love her.
Love her. Yeah. Love her. Shout out to Tig Notaro.
Thanks, Tig.
You guys get out there. Go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference in this world, whether you are using your Vitamix to make drinks for people who are thirsty and gay, whether you are doing crowdsource funding campaign for your new gay movie, whether you are Tig Notaro doing such incredible work out there. Get out there and use your voice. And of course, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?